This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. And in the studio with me, Professor Mahendran Nair. He's a professor of econometrics at a private university. We're going to be discussing inclusive innovation and sustainable development. Welcome to the show, Professor. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Meera.
Professor, you've written a paper. It's titled Inclusive Innovation and Sustainable Development, Leapfrogging to a High-Income Economy. What sort of prompted the need to actually go and, you know, do such in-depth research into all of this?
Actually, it comes back to in 1997 when I first returned back to Malaysia. Mm-hmm. That's when Malaysia was caught in a financial crisis.
That's right. I remember that.
Yes. And one of the things that economists were saying is the regional economies essentially were in what we call a diminishing returns, where they had rapid growth in the early 80s. But in the 90s, the economies were starting to sputter.
That's right.
And part of it is essentially because many of them were using input-driven. They were using a lot of labor and capital, less capital in terms of economic development. There comes a point that that only gives you a certain amount of growth. Mm-hmm. And many of the regional economies, Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, were caught in that trap. So one of the key things economists have pointed out is that for Malaysia and regional economies, for them to move up in terms of productivity and economic development, they needed another impetus for growth. That's innovation. Mm-hmm. And this is what prompted me to really understand what's innovation, yeah, and what drives innovation and what are the key blueprints that essentially supports an innovation ecosystem.
Okay.
And that's where my journey started, in right, trying to really understand what is an ecosystem in terms of driving innovation. How did developed countries do it? Can Malaysia learn from other countries, particularly other developing countries that have actually moved up to become pace setters?
Right. You know, we've had the whole idea of the government transformation program. Sure. We've emphasized innovation in a big, big way.
Yeah.
I mean, we even have an institute, AIM, am I correct? Innovation Malaysia. That's right. Innovasi Malaysia. And of course, we know what we need to do. But what is it? What is it? Where are we lacking that we haven't done as well in the global innovation race?
I think one of the key things we really need to understand is in the early days of Malaysian economic development, most of the foreign direct investment came in because of cheap labor. But there's a lot of competing economies that were also moving towards, you know, large labor markets. So we had to start competing with Indonesia and China and India. And this is where I think with a very small labor market, we were unable to compete.
Yeah.
So one of the key things is that how do we move up the innovation value chain? This is where the Malaysian government in 2010 essentially started developing a series of national plan, the new economic model, the 10th Malaysia plan, essentially to map the Malaysian innovation ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And that entails developing the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure, the infrastructure, the intellectual capital development, also developing the integrity good governance systems, and developing interaction, what I call smart partnerships and linkages between small, medium enterprises to ensure that all sectors of the economy benefits from this economic development plan.
Mm-hmm.
So again, creating an environment so that businesses thrive, attracting foreign direct investment, but more importantly, nurturing local business development to support foreign multinational.
Mm-hmm. Where are we lacking and what can we do, you know, better to facilitate the process?
I think one of the key things is that over the last 3 years, these plans are in the third year of, I mean, it started off in 2010. We're still, yeah, in the early stages of development. I think we're starting to see new infrastructure development. One of the areas that essentially that is going to be pushed really hard over the next few years is essentially the talent development.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the national education blueprint is really, really critical.
What did you think of it?
I thought it is a good step, you know, in the right direction in terms of looking at education from preschool right up to postdoctoral, postdoctoral research. But one of the things I think there's great emphasis is English. Over the last few years, I think we see that the level of English competency has really gone down significantly.
Mm-hmm.
What I was really disappointed is essentially the move towards the science and technology. I thought retaining science and technology in English was really critical for Malaysia to really play a big, you know, role in the science, technology, and innovation space. Having said that, I think the new blueprint has got some really good gems in terms of start looking at education from a more creative and more innovative way, right from the preschool, not just at the university level.
Yeah,
so the key thing is that, one of the things that we will have to look at is the implementation strategy. While the national plans are there, we need to really track, are these plans, programs, and are implemented effectively so that we are able to measure the performance of our students to ensure that they're able to become creative at a very early stage and eventually start contributing to economic development as they move through the university and the technical schools and eventually research centers.
Yep, that's education, Dr. My Professor. What you were also talking about, what else we can do better?
I think one of the key things is that in the short term, we do have a serious shortage of talent. And if you look at the experience of a lot of developed countries, we have a lot of Malaysians out there in different... brain drain has been a major problem in Malaysia. The key thing is how do we attract back some of the best talent around the world to use Malaysia as the base for developing new innovation, new sources of growth. One is the targeting Malaysians, but also targeting others who want to come back to this part of the world. Asia is the focus over the next 10 to 50 years. Mm-hmm. And with what's happening in Europe and in North America and other parts of the world with slowed growth, many of the more entrepreneurial, innovative, creative talent are looking at places where they can really thrive. It's not just remuneration, but what they're looking for, an environment for them to become creative. And this is where I think some of the national development plans that the Malaysian government has put in place in terms of looking at making businesses much more easier and friendly, business-friendly environment, looking at new technology support, identifying key priority areas that Malaysia wants to go in, which aligns with some of the global pace-setter countries. Mm-hmm. So this essentially creates an environment that will attract some of the best talents, not just Malaysians, but people around the world.
That's right. And, there's always talk about the middle-income trap when it comes to achieving a high-income status. Are we in a middle-income trap?
Yes, we are, actually. Over the last few years, if you see, the income levels have kind of tapered off. And partly because in the early days, the growth rates were very high. But we see that a lot of the countries are moving the same space as Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So we have serious competitors in our manufacturing sector, particularly from China and Indonesia's awakening. Yep. So clearly, there are major impacts in terms of our national income and our growth sector. So for Malaysia and other regional economies, not just in Asia, but we're also starting to see the Latin American countries as they become more stabilized in terms of politically, and the Eastern European countries. The foreign direct investments that move to Asia are starting to find other alternate source. So clearly that's going to impact in terms of foreign direct investments. And even Malaysians are going to start looking at investing in places where they get better returns. Mm-hmm. So until and unless we move up the innovation value chain to become more productive and more efficient, I think our economy will start sputtering. And this is where I think the government's direction in terms of helping Malaysia create an environment to attract the best talent and also the best, multinational companies to come out and use Malaysia as a test bed for innovation and scientific endeavours.
Right. In when you talk about the middle income trap, according to The Economist in 2013, of course, we all want to reach a high income status, but little is known why so few countries have actually succeeded in making that transition from middle income to high income status. Why is that?
I think part of it is the traditional economic model. Often we talk about the capital-intensive sectors, but what we really see is that in countries that have really moved up in terms of becoming pace-setters like Korea and other regional economies is that they really understood what it takes to drive innovation. What would essentially attract the best talent to come out to create the environment? Only more recently, the countries are starting to understand that besides, the infrastructure, there are other soft, factors that are really critical. Talent is critical, but more importantly, integrity and good governance mm-hmm. are becoming more and more important. Political stability is really, really critical in terms of attracting the best foreign direct investment. So not just looking at, providing incentives, but broader creating an environment for economies and particularly for firms to create value.
Are you saying we should start moving away from our dependence on foreign direct investments?
I think one of the key things is that while foreign direct investment is really critical, but what we need to do is attract high value-added foreign direct investments so that over the years we have better technology transfer and putting in proper incentives for our firms to actually learn from some of the pay setters and eventually becoming part of the global supply network.
Okay. And also when you talk about the whole idea of going towards a high-income nation, 70% of the world's population live in cities, Professor. And you know, you have also emphasized in the research the livelihood of the bottom 40% of Malaysians. What are your concerns as far as they're concerned, and where will they be when we transition into a high income nation state?
So one of the challenges we see is essentially when we talk about inclusive economic model, one of the big problems we see is that uneven economic development, regional in terms of regions, we see that because of lack of employment opportunities in the rural areas and the estates, you see that the younger generation are migrating to the urban areas. And this is a common phenomenon in many developing countries. So how do we, and what's happening is that many of the rural areas are hollowing out in terms of lack of talent, and you have immigrant population coming in to support the industry. Inclusive economic development means that developing those rural and estates into a viable economic localities. Mm-hmm. So essentially looking at the industries out there, supporting them, providing the right infrastructure and also the supplier network so that these rural areas become a pillar or supporting pillars for some of the urban areas. As we make these rural and estates become more viable, more attractive with various support from education to healthcare, you'll see the less likely of people migrating. Mm-hmm. And this is the only way we're going to stop this brain drain from rural to the urban areas and you know, develop all aspects of Malaysia.
So where are we faltering in our whole policies to move towards a high income nation status?
I think one of the primary focuses is that we've moved towards developing a lot of the areas in major cities. But we, over the last, from 1970s, 80s and 90s, we've pushed towards industrialization, but agriculture took a back seat. Mm-hmm. So I think there needs to be a reemergence of how do we integrate the agriculture sector within the context of a industrial economy. And this is where I think that we are starting to see that key agriculture sectors are important, like palm oil and rubber, and even for that matter, even vegetable farming and so on, could move up the technology intensive, you know, becoming more capital intensive and knowledge intensive as they move up that value chain, income levels move up. And what you'll see is that wealth creation in those localities start moving up. Okay. So how do we create that ecosystem that makes those industries which used to be labor intensive to become more knowledge and capital intensive?
But sometimes, I mean, there's only so much you can do as far as the palm oil industry is concerned, for an example. I mean, you need to come up with techniques to get these fruits down. I mean, to use, technology. I'm not sure whether that's really going to work or not. I could be wrong.
Well, this is where I think the strategy that the Malaysian government has taken is particularly in with respect to the corridor development. Part of the corridor development is to ensure that the spillover effects of some of the key industries to other localities. And we hope that as these industries develop, it'll support some of the neighboring localities, particularly rural estates and also the rural areas.
Yep.
And I think that is going to be really important in terms of how we ensure that the corridor development also harnesses all the other ecosystems to make it really an inclusive.
We all know that we are terribly dependent on foreign labor, right? And as you said, cost of production is going high, is much higher now.
Sure.
Can we afford to reduce foreign labor?
I think we need to, as we move towards a more competitive economy, we have no choice but to move towards a more mechanized and a knowledge-intensive sector. Most developed countries did it. And I think for us to become a developed economy, we need to slowly, gradually move towards a knowledge-intensive and a capital-intensive. That requires quite a lot of intensive, you know, incentives, particularly for the small, medium enterprises that are unable to essentially adapt to new technology and new, you know, knowledge and new R&D and scientific endeavors.
Okay.
So clearly, almost close to 90% of our economy is essentially driven by the small, medium enterprise. This is where the gaps are. So we really need to ensure that they have access to the technology, we have the right incentives to enable them to move up the value chain.
Okay. The other thing, of course, we're all very, very concerned about is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And that's probably going to impact small and medium-scale industries in a big way, as well as intellectual property, I think, which is something that's going to, as you said, help us leapfrog into becoming a high-income nation status. What should we be keeping in mind as far as the Trans-Pacific Partnership is concerned?
I think one of the key things is that there are going to be winners and losers in any of the liberalization, you know, policies that Malaysia ties up with. I think one of the key things is that we need to ensure that whatever treaties or whatever pacts that we sign, that we open up opportunity for our trailblazers, our pace setters, but more importantly, providing adequate time for our other industries that are unable to cope with some of the competitive, you know, industries from, you know, other countries. Mm-hmm. So clearly having a clear strategy of 3 to 5 years to scaling them up. We cannot hold off, you know, being part of the global, you know, economic pact. But clearly we need to have a clear strategy over the next 5 to 10 years to get our industries to become more competitive. Without which I think, you know, we will be forced to, you know, look at, you know, foreign firms coming in. But I think the key thing is that for us in this direction as we move towards is that how do we scale up our SMEs to become part of a broader value chain so that the whole cluster or the value chain becomes highly competitive.
Mm-hmm. Change is always difficult, Professor.
Yes.
How do we go about this in a tactful manner without compromising? I mean, we know that, you know, sometimes we politicize education, you know, of course, the economy is also, you know, part of politics to a very large extent. And if it's not in favor of the people, then chances are politically, you know, you are threatened in a way. So how do we make this transition as easy as possible for everyone, so everyone's happy really at the end of the day?
I think one of the key things that people realize that competition is out there, but what they will really want is essentially support to become competitive. I think most people, they realize that subsidies are there for a short while, but what we need to do is that to make them understand that the subsidies will have to go if we want to be competitive. And if you give them clear directions, these are things that we ought to be doing in terms of getting you up and to become competitive. From the rakyat right up to small, medium enterprises want to go out.
Yep.
They see that the Malaysian market, 28 million, is too small. They have to venture out. To venture out, they need to be able to play the rules of the global game. Part of it is that providing them the support, you know, giving them the right, you know, awareness of, look, the market is not 28 million, but actually it's 6 billion out there. And these are the strategies that we need to put in place to help them become more competitive.
Mm. All right. And, you know, I'm just thinking, either way, things are politicized, isn't it? You take away subsidies, it's politicized. You don't take away subsidies, it's politicized. So it's a no-win situation, really. Yeah. I think people just need to get educated
that's
understand. And of course, the people who are socioeconomically challenged really need to be looked
that's
at.
That's right.
We're discussing inclusive innovation and sustainable development with Professor Mahendra Nair. When we come back, we'll find out a little bit more about the whole drafting of the National Innovation Policy and how effective that will be. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. Professor Mahendra Nair, Professor of Econometrics at a private university with me. We're discussing inclusive innovation and sustainable development. Professor's actually come up with a research paper titled Leapfrogging to a High-Income Economy, and you had very good reasons for doing it. This was done, when was this actually carried out?
This was done somewhere in 2008, 2009.
Mm-hmm. Has much changed now? I mean, in terms of what your findings were, any changes to that?
Yes, actually there's a number of changes that we see. The countries that were actually behind Malaysia in terms of economic development and competitiveness, we predicted that they will move forward mm-hmm. at a much faster pace, particularly countries in the Middle East. And clearly we predicted in 2008 that as they develop their innovation ecosystem and they put in very focused strategy in prioritizing key industries, they will move forward. And we are starting to see that some of the Middle Eastern economies are starting to ramp up their innovation ecosystem and starting to move ahead. So there are major challenges, particularly as we move towards the Islamic banking and finance area and some of the halal industries that Malaysia has prioritized. There are bigger players that are moving in as they start building their own innovation.
How do we find our niche?
I think one of the key things is Malaysia has strengths. Traditionally, Malaysia has been an agriculture economy with a very strong industrial base. And clearly, how do we link the agriculture sector, particularly, you know, with the industrial sector, so that we cater for the entire global market. The other area that we're really strong is the service sector. Our financial system is really strong. We have a very sound education system. It is visionary.
Really?
Well, it is visionary that we moved into opening up the private higher education sector,
right.
And we have global players here. So Malaysia is seen as a leading light in terms of in the developing world to attract some of the best talent. You see that you know, in some of the, if you look at the private higher education, we have quite a number of students from around the region that come out to Malaysia, mm-hmm. which otherwise they'd have gone to other more developed economies.
Yep.
So clearly, you know, as how other developed economies have tapped into these talent and retained them, if Malaysia is able to do that, I think clearly we have a competitive advantage.
I mean, as you speak, I'm just thinking socioeconomically, if you are challenged indeed, it almost sounds like you're just going to regress with a system like this in place. Do we need to emphasize these people in order to ensure that we don't have this disparity of, you know, people earning what, 6,700 or $15,000?
I think one of the things I think we need to also see that in the broader context, Malaysia is not a basket case. Malaysia is seen as a leading light within the developing economy. And a lot of developing countries look up to the Malaysian model. What to move up to become a pace setter, the challenges are much more intensive. Mm-hmm. But we already have a number of strengths. We've got a very strong agriculture sector. We've got a sound technological base through our manufacturing. We've got a very strong service sector. We are rich in resources. How do we create an environment such that we can nurture this development, attract the best talent to make Malaysia really an innovation paradise?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And have you given any of your feedback to the people concerned?
Yes, I'm actively involved in some of the policy work, both with industry, NGOs, and also with government.
Yeah, and everyone needs to come together. Everyone needs to be on the same page. Do you think we are at the moment?
I think we are. I think we understand the realities out there. Competition is just knocking at our doors. If you walk through the giants and some of the top retail industry, mm-hmm. You see that 20 years ago, you see a lot of electronics are made in Malaysia. But today, most of them are replaced by electronics from China and other countries. Mm-hmm. Clearly, the reality is hitting that bigger players are there in the market. Jobs are at stake. We have no choice but to become competitive. Right. And small, medium enterprises are feeling the intense pressure. So how do we transition from a production-based economy to a needs-based economy? You know, I think a lot of our economic policies are very much race base, but how do we move towards a needs base that essentially the only race that we compete is to become globally competitive.
Right, okay.
So again, I think that is really critical, that how do we essentially look at the bottom 40%, particularly small, medium enterprises, equip them to become globally competitive.
I hope I'm pronouncing Lawrence Tsai's his name properly. I mean, he's from the School of Oriental and African Studies, and he says, Malaysia will definitely reach the target of being a high-income nation status by 2020, but he says it is not likely to move above and beyond its competitors for a long time once it has reached this stage. Would you agree with him?
I totally agree. I think one of the things is that the target is moving. Countries are moving at a faster pace. I think what Malaysia ought to be is create an environment such that we become part of the global supply network, global knowledge network. Mm-hmm. And again, I think being a small economy, we have no choice but to be part of, integrated with a broader global economy.
Right. And, you know, if you have any concerns at all, what are some of the major concerns that you may have as far as our whole, you know, drive towards being a high-income nation state?
I think one of the major issues that I think both the corporate sector and you know, foreign multinationals have always emphasized is actually talent. I think talent is a major issue. And I think we hope that while the new blueprint, education blueprint, is more of a long-term strategy, we really need to have a more short-term and medium-term strategy in terms of attracting the best talent back to Malaysia. Mm-hmm. I think there have been various initiatives to do that. How successful they have been, I think, needs to be really studied very carefully. And I think without having, you know, the talent both domestically here and also Malaysian talent out there that is able to identify the top technological changes and drawing back to our industry, I think it's going to be a major challenge. But I think the government is putting various incentives to essentially create that environment to attract the talent. In the right direction, we just need to hold the course.
Yeah, we also need to say the right things. There's a national innovation policy, which, I don't know, has it been drafted already or is it out already?
There's a national innovation strategy in place. And if you look at the new economic model is underpinned by an innovation strategy. So part of it is essentially to enhance productivity and economic growth through, you know, a new economic model that is science and technology. So I think the key thing is that ensuring we have the right technology, the right talent, creative workforce, and the right partnerships and linkages, and also having a more inclusive economic development strategy that raises the innovation and creativity level of all segments of the population.
Thank you very much for joining me today, Professor. Professor Mahendran Nair, a professor of econometrics at a private university on inclusive innovation and sustainable development on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.